Oh, well, peas and carrots. Peas and carrots.
I'm thinking about swimming.
Oh, swimming?
No.
That's silly.
No, I'm thinking about long-term.
Oh, well.
Well. Oh, hello. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Clatch. It's so nice that you're here.
That was
you surprised me. You're listening to the Clatch on Voice of Vashon, KVSH 101.9 on your radio dial. This is a place where we like to say what we want to say, what's on our mind, ask some big questions, maybe have some laughter. I don't know. Kind of like in the before times when we used to gather at a friend's table and sip something nice, have a little chat about the things we think and wonder about. I'm Linda Nygaard, and with me in the studio today is Susan McCabe.
Hello.
And we also have a very special guest today, whose name is Mr. Chris Austin.
Oh, well, hello. Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here.
We're glad you're here.
Does that actually sound like a crowd cheering or like me throwing up?
It sounds like the croup or, you know, long hauler COVID.
It's a big laugh. Yeah. Well, Heidi's not here today. Heidi is usually with us, Heidi Skrypek, but she had a very challenging swim around Coronado Island the last few days, and she triumphed, and I'm sure that
That's like swimming around New Zealand. That is a big deal.
Yeah, it is.
Coronado is not right. Insignificant.
No, it's huge. So anyway, she's going to have stories for us to listen to, I'm sure, when she comes in next time.
Yeah, she's an animal.
I'd like to do a little bit of business before we get on with it. Yeah, just a little bit.
All right.
No math, is there? Come on.
Okay, so I just want to remind people that we have a Voice of Vashon app. And it's so much easier to use than the website. And you can get to the shows easier. So I just encourage everybody to download that app. And we do have the website at www.voiceofvashon.org. You can go there and find everything you need too. And all the shows are posted later.
And if you use the app, you can listen to Voice of Vashon anywhere in the world on your phone.
At any time. Yeah. We had a listener inquiry last week with one of our listeners on the street. I met a person. I'm not going to tell you who it was. But anyway, she's a merchant here in Vashon. And she said, you know, would you guys talk about community bathrooms on... on your show? And I said, what are you talking about? And she said, you know, we need community bathrooms in Vashon because we have so many tourists and so many people who need to use the facilities. And she said, my toilet will not handle it. It backs up from the tourism people who come in, you know, cross-legged and saying, please, please, please let me use your facilities. And, you know, she says, if it's an elder person or a little girl or something, she'll let them in. But she said, you know, she can't. It's a steady stream. And that was good. No pun intended.
This could be a business opportunity.
Yeah, right. Could be.
How many sheets of toilet paper would you like?
Yeah, right. And how much are they? Yeah. So anyway, I guess we don't have any community bathrooms, really. We have some at Ober Park.
We do.
Well,
we
they're locked most of the time, aren't they? Yeah.
No, at Ober Park, they are keeping them.
I'm thinking of the Village Green.
You were thinking of Village Green.
Village Green.
Actually, in town, the only public bathrooms I'm aware of, one is in the Vashon Pharmacy, and they allow you to use it. There's the Thriftway.
Yeah, but there's only one.
To use it. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. No, they're not plentiful,
no,
I have to say.
They're not.
We do have public bathrooms at Jensen Point.
Yes.
That are open, but that's not in town.
And so that's not a merchant thing.
No, it's not. And you make a good point.
So I don't know. I mean, who should do that? Is that a Chamber of Commerce thing or what? What is that?
I think it's probably a county thing.
A county thing.
Because of, you know, disposal and septic systems. And, you know, the sewage plant is not far away.
You think?
I just think head that way. You can find somewhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, is that a bad idea?
You know, I guess I just wanted to put that out there and see if anybody has any ideas or, you know, I hadn't thought about that with regard to the merchants and how hard it is for them. You know?
I hadn't either. That's a really good point because, you know, we don't see that because we live here. But
yeah,
we don't see what tourists are needing.
Exactly. And we need their business now.
So, we do.
I realized that I did not introduce you properly, Mr. Austin.
I was kind of waiting, you know.
And
Nobel Prize laureate, you know.
Chris Austin is a local raconteur, I think I would call you. He's full of badinage. And he's got a little tour company. He can do the mostly true stories.
Mostly true raconteurs.
Yeah. And he has, I'm going to let you say what shows you have, Chris, because you have some really great shows on Voice of Vashon.
Well, I have the Mostly True radio show, which is the longest. That's been on in one form or the other since the station began.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty
broadcasting.
Funny.
It's a funny show. I like it.
It's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And I also do Dove Speaks, which is domestic violence issues surrounding that. And the latest one is History Worth Hearing.
And what does that mean?
That is sponsored by the Vashon Heritage Museum. So we bring on docents and speakers, and we talk about old newspapers. We review them from, like, we've gone through most of the newspapers on the island that began in 1892.
Wow.
We found the very first one by Vanna Linda.
Really?
Yeah. And
how
some of them are hilarious.
Are they?
One of them talked about this treatment for rabies.
Okay.
And it said, well, this doctor was in India, and these two people fell over dead. Right?
Okay.
Somebody
ka-plunk?
Came. Yes. They were bitten by snakes, which reptiles don't carry rabies. So that's a whole different thing. But they said what cured them was they took some white powder and they blew it up their nose. And they reanimated. And they said the trick is you got to blow it up the nostril of the side that the bite is on.
Oh.
And I'm like, that's not the way the circulatory system works, but okay.
Well, I'm thinking cocaine.
It probably, well, I'm thinking the whole thing is fabricated.
Yeah, right.
but that was the new treatment for rabies.
Yeah.
And it said you could use it on animals. So if you want to cure a rabid dog, just go up and blow this up its nose.
And run really fast.
I hope you don't get savaged.
Well, you know, this might nowadays be a patent situation if we could find out the recipe for that white powder. No?
I think there probably is some very popular white powder out there now.
Oh,
yes.
Maybe there is.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's not baking soda, baby.
A big gang that doesn't want it copywritten or patented.
Right. Yeah. Right. We had one more suggestion from a listener that a subject that they would like to hear about is colloquialisms and how different people speak differently and say the same thing. And so what I would like to encourage listeners to do is if you have some funny sayings that people say, what do you mean? I'd love to hear them. And you can email us at theclatch@voiceofvashon.org. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anything, you know, there's a Western colloquialisms and English ones. And
you have some examples that people might
relate? I remember growing up in Canada, keep your stick on the ice, which meant keep focused.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Stay there.
You know, it also applies to hockey itself, but it had a meaning outside of that.
I'm racking my brain here to think of some and coming up with zilch.
Well, it's colloquialisms or it's, you know, it's almost slang sometimes too, you know, because one that springs to my mind is the word pinafore. And when you see old essays from the 1800s and early and later on, they call it a penny.
Huh.
And I didn't know for a long time when I was reading those books what a penny was.
Yeah. Well, you ever been the weather when it's sunny out, but it's raining?
Mm-hmm.
In Tennessee, they call that the devil is beating his wife.
Oh,
wow.
That's how they describe that weather. So it's this, it's the, I don't know, it's good and bad. I don't know how that's supposed to explain that odd weather phenomenon.
Well, this is not a colloquialism, but I've often wondered, what is the difference between partly cloudy and partly sunny?
Not much difference. Depends on the graphics, I think.
I think it's one side of 50%.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I had one and I just lost it. So anyway, we're going to do a show about how the English language has evolved and devolved. We've sort of touched on it, but colloquially,
it's fascinating.
It is fascinating. And the things that people say, I have a friend who was born in Idaho. And when I lived in Colorado, we were sitting around the fire one night talking, and he said, big thunderstorm. And I said, man, that is a noisy thunderstorm. And he said, yeah. He said, as my mom would say, that's God rolling potatoes across the sky. He was from Idaho.
From Idaho, right.
I hadn't heard that one.
Well, that's funny. When we get into our laughter part of the show, I've got a George Carlin routine on euphemisms, which is another linguistic twist,
if you
will.
I think that would be really fun. Yeah. That would be really fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
I want to know where we got silent letters. I mean, the whole point of letters is to make a noise.
Good point.
So, who thought of this?
Yeah.
Like knife? Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know what? We should put a K on the front.
Knife.
Yeah.
I think this is to trip up immigrants.
Oh.
Make our language harder.
Make English language harder to understand.
It's a tough language to learn.
It works.
Yeah.
Works on those of us who were born here as well.
So, let's change the subject a little bit. Okay. Have you ever heard of cheese rolling?
I have.
You have?
I have.
Of course you have. Of course you have.
He's the historian.
Anything to do with cheese.
You like it? You're a cheese lover?
I love cheese.
Okay, so there's a thing that happens in England, and it is there's a National Geographic article that I read, and it's called Why Do People Risk Their Lives Chasing Cheese? And they literally do chase these 80-pound rolls, what do you call them?
A wheel of cheese.
And it's a contest, and people get very hurt doing it. So it's no longer sanctioned, but it still goes on. It started in 1826. And my first experience with cheese rolling was in a book. And it's the funniest book I've ever read in my entire... I laughed out loud in this book, and I don't laugh out loud at books, but it's called Three Men in a Boat, Say Nothing of the Dog. And it's by a man called Jerome K. Jerome, and it was written in the 1800s. It's hilarious. It's about three young men. Think of Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
Okay. Is this like The Hangover, maybe?
Well, no.
Some misadventures?
No. Well, sort of. But it's in the 1800s, and they decided that they needed to take a little trip down the river in a boat. So these three men who have no idea how to camp, no idea how to cook, they're taking the dog with them, and they're doing all these things. Anyway, there's a cheese rolling thing in that book. I had to read it two or three times, and every time I read it, I laughed out loud. It's hilarious.
It is weird. I've seen clips of it on YouTube.
Oh, have
you? And people have died.
People have died.
Yes.
Yeah, they're running a race, and it's down a hill.
And the cheese is behind them, gaining on them.
I know.
80-pound with really steep hills, a lot of momentum. But, I mean, if you're going to die by cheese, that's not so bad.
Well,
that's the power of cheese.
All right, well, here's cheese rolling trivia. Mm-hmm. It does say no one has ever really been killed.
Oh, really?
Cheese roll, though there is an apocryphal story about a runner dropping dead at the end of a race centuries ago. Four adults and four children were zapped by lightning when a sudden thunderstorm interrupted the 1982 cheese roll.
Well, I didn't know you're going to get on the internet. I just got
you know, it's got to be true if it's on the internet.
Mostly true.
To overcome their fear, most cheese roll runners rely on Dutch courage. Any alcohol will do, but the anesthetic of choice tends to be scrumpy or, in a pinch, perry. That is hard cider made from pears. Anyway.
It was thought when it started that it's thought to have been some kind of a fertility rite. Now, I don't know. My imagination goes wild when you think, what is a fertility rite with men chasing cheese
down a hill?
There's
no way I want kids that badly. Nope. I will be barren, thank you.
Yeah.
Is it just men? Women don't participate in the cheese rolls?
They're pretty smart. No, I don't think they do.
So there's a champion roller now, and his name is Chris Anderson, and he's become the winningest cheese racer of all times, having claimed history's greatest number of dairy product discs in his 14 years in competition. So, you know, he says that cheese racing
he's rolling in the endorsements.
Yep, and he says cheese racing is in his blood. You know, so go
figure. Probably a lot of cholesterol too.
I was gonna say,
Hey, do you guys like pickles?
I do.
I really
what
like
kind
pickles.
Of pickles do you like?
Dill. I like them tart.
Do you know about the difference? I like pickles too, but I don't know much about them. You know,
and I think they kind of got a you know, got the credit for everything pickled, right? Like, they're just pickles.
The pickle, right.
Pickled carrots are pickled carrots, but pickles are pickles. They should be pickled cucumbers.
Pickled cucumbers.
Good point.
It's a really good point, because pickled turnips and
All kinds of pickled
eggs.
Stuff. Pickled eggs. Ooh, yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Let's have some pickled eggs.
Are they good?
I don't,
I don't think I've ever had one.
Well,
it's kind of like a hard-boiled egg,
some
right?
Some of that Perry cider would help.
Would help.
Yeah, yeah.
Makes
the kosher egg go dill, which was popularized by Jewish immigrants in New York's Lower East Side in the late 1800s, their kosher label came from Jewish Orthodox.
Okay.
Nowadays, though, kosher really has little to do with that, and it's more about the pickle's characteristics, whether it's pickled in a salt brine or whether it's pickled in vinegar.
Oh.
And so the salt brine is the kosher pickle.
I didn't know how you pickled.
It's called lacto-fermentation. And then New York's Jewish pickle hawkers also popularized the half-sour pickle.
There's a career for you.
And these pickles are only brined for about a week. Oh. So they stay bright green, and they're kind of crunchy, but they've got a garlicky, salty flavor to them.
Oh, it's like Clausen's. Clausen's is like that.
Kind of like that, but they're not bright green.
Oh, they're not?
No, they're kind of
colorblind. They're all green to me.
They're not bright green.
Even the carrots.
But a full sour pickle.
sour
pickup is darker in color, and it's been brined a little bit longer, so it's got intense flavor, but it's pretty popular. Then there is one called Tershi, which is pickled turnips introduced by immigrants and have become an integral part of Israeli food.
Really?
Yeah. They're bright pink colors due to the inclusion of beets, which also adds some color to the brine.
Pickled beets are really tasty.
I know. And then one more is amba. It's a spiced pickle mango condiment with Indian roots that has become Israeli street food.
Huh.
Thanks to Iraqi immigrants.
Why is being in a pickle a bad thing?
Really? Maybe
you're brined.
Yeah.
You're sour.
Yeah, maybe.
That's one of those colloquialisms.
That's a colloquialism, right? I'm in a pickle.
It is. So, you know, speaking of pickles, it's kind of the fermentation. This is a segue into our next topic, which is called Send in the Bugs. The Michelangelos Need Cleaning.
Ooh.
I read an article in the New York Times about restoring one of Michelangelo's, sarcophagus in a chapel in Italy. And it was built... He built it, carved it, these beautiful, beautiful statues for the Medicis. And now, since then, you know, they've just become kind of black and grimy and ugly and discolored. And so there was a top secret mission at the museum to import certain microbes that would just eat the ick, but would leave the marble alone. And so they did some experimenting with little tiny places and found exactly the right combination of microbes to just eat the ick and leave the...
That reminds me of scarab beetles that eat all the flesh off bones various reasons.
Well, I thought it was really interesting. And also she said that the woman they interviewed was talking about how really awful it was, when you start seeing the layers of stuff that come off of it. And she attributed the mess to one Medici in particular, Alessandro, who was a ruler of Florence, and he was assassinated. Then, apparently, he was buried in the tomb without being properly eviscerated.
Oh, I hate when that happens.
So she says, over the centuries, he seeped into Michelangelo's marble and created...
Ew.
Yeah, I know. Creating deep stains and, more recently, providing a feast for the chapel's preferred cleaning product. Huh? A bacterium called Serratia ficaria SH7. You know that one?
Oh, sure.
I got some at the house.
Yeah.
It's in the fridge.
Serratia.
That's how I clean out my fridge.
Ficaria.
So basically what they're saying, What they're saying now is that the microbes ate Alessandro because he leaked out of his coffin and he's gone now. There's nothing. Well, the microbes ate him.
That's what he gets for being icky.
That's right. But the thing is, this happened as a result of COVID. They had been they had been thinking about it, but they hadn't been able to do it because the museum's always open and you can't try that kind of stuff in front of people, you know? And so I guess I don't know. So anyway, during COVID, it was closed. So they did it, and they think now they have provided a blueprint for further restoration.
Good things are coming from COVID.
Yeah, yeah. The microbes that they used were some of them used to clean up petroleum spills,
okay,
oil
yeah.
spills, and that kind of stuff. So
it's always been held out as kind of an oil spill, you know, cleanup thing, but it's never really coming true. Water gets really choppy. They get dispersed and they don't do what they're supposed to.
Is that what was touted as what could be cleaning up the plastic island in the ocean? Is that the same bacteria?
I think I've heard something like that, where they've bred some kind of microorganism bacteria that
consumes the plastic.
Yeah, so that's its energy source rather than you know, plankton or sunlight.
Yeah.
Plastic is petroleum.
Michelangelo's sarcophagi.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, but you can look it up in the New York Times. They have beautiful photographs of
ick.
Not so much of the ick, but of the sculptures and the sarcophagus. It's really
I think it's time that we thank some people.
Okay. Alrighty. Let's do that.
Yeah. All right. Let's see if I can get these to go.
Voice
here.
Of Vashon thanks Windermere Real Estate for its support, making our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. Find them on the web at WindermereVashon.com.
VOV programming support is provided by the Hardware Store Restaurant, serving great good food, free Wi-Fi, and signature cocktails in an historic 125-year-old building, the heartbeat of Vashon Island. On the web at thsrestaurant.com.
Was that
no,
Heidi?
That was, no.
Wasn't that Heidi? Oh, sorry. No. Oh, sorry.
You get a nickel, the person who gets it right.
Yeah, guess. Okay, so here, one more little story. Chris, I know you'll like this one. It's on the long-debated origin story of the chicken. And apparently, it has been said that the chicken was in Southeast Asia in the Indus Valley.
I have heard that.
Yeah. And that rather than originating from a singular species, they drew their genetics from a combination of red and gray jungle fowl. And apparently, that's not quite true.
Well, I also heard that Colonel Sanders was actually a colonel in the British Army in India, and that's where he saw the chicken.
Oh, and that's what happened.
Exactly.
That's what happened. Well, it seems likely that the egg came first.
Yes, that is true.
At some point, the almost chicken creature produced an egg containing a bird whose genetic makeup, due to some small mutation, was fully chicken.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Boom, here's a chicken.
Chicken.
Yep, boom, there's a chicken. And so
I was an iguana, and now I'm a chicken?
Yeah,
not quite that fast. You're a flying reptile.
Oh, a flying reptile.
Yes.
Well, that was the first.
A pterodactyl.
Yeah.
And then you got some feathers that you really couldn't fly with, but you could glide with, like Archaeopteryx. And then but see,
the egg
was developed by reptiles, so they could be away from the water to reproduce, unlike amphibians. So that was there for millions and millions of years, and so that's the egg came before the chicken.
So it's not even a question
anymore.
Solve
that question.
No,
it's not a question. And I'm really glad to have the answer, because next time somebody says to me, well, what came first? I'll know. Also, I just want to tell you what Bill Nye said about it.
Oh, yeah.
On Twitter. He said, the result of proto chicken and proto rooster hooking up, it's evolution. So I guess there's not much news around that, except that the chicken's turn toward food appears to have taken place in the biblical city of Maresha, Israel.
Really?
Around 400 BCE. People began eating chicken, and they were finding, you know, remains, and some intact.
Some ancient buckets.
So, yeah, don't you always wonder who was the first person to try something like that? Like, because most of what humans ate, they looked at what the animals were eating.
Right.
And if the animals lived, then they were okay.
Yeah.
Then they tried it. So who was the first person to eat a chicken and not die?
Yeah, so you get the new guy to try it.
Yeah, right.
I always wonder who was the first person to eat artichokes.
Yeah, who figured out you could eat those?
Some starving guy.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, things are moving right along in our world right now, and sometimes we feel like it's not really in the direction we want, and we get so I do anyway. I get really involved in what's going on politically and what's happened historically, and you know, Black Lives Matter, and I'm really active in that world. But sometimes it seems kind of heavy, and it seems like I just can't take any more bad news. So I thought today, let's talk about what makes you laugh.
I can bring up bad news.
Chris, we can always count on you. I know that. Mr. Bad News. So, you know, laughter is something that we'd love to do, obviously. And I get really curious about what it is.
Yes.
Would you like to know?
What is laughter?
What it is. No, I found out why it's the best medicine.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Laughter decreases stress hormones and increases immune cells and infection-fighting antibodies, thus improving your resistance to disease. Laughter triggers the release of endorphins, the body's natural feel-good chemicals. Mm-hmm. Endorphins promote an overall sense of well-being and can even temporarily relieve pain.
I read something somewhere, and of course I can't remember the statistics, but it is X amount of laughter increases your lifespan by X amount.
Really?
Yeah, like a certain amount of laughter every day.
Huh.
You live longer in the end.
You or die laughing.
Yeah. Die laughing. Except I hope we're eviscerated in the correct manner. So Chris, tell me what you're thinking.
You know, I think studying humor is like studying quantum mechanics. And I'll explain why. Quantum mechanics is the study of subatomic particles like electrons.
Right.
Now, when you study electrons, the very act of observing the electron changes its behavior and how it acts and how people perceive it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's really weird. And I think
how do they know?
They know.
How do they know?
I don't know.
No, I mean the electrons. How do the electrons know they're being watched?
It's energetic.
Yeah, I know.
So, well, it's by inference, I think. You know, if it's not observed, this happens. If it's observed, something different happens.
Okay.
But my point is, I think when you study humor and you dissect it and you observe every angle and you deconstruct it, it becomes something else. It's lost that kind of a ethereal joy that is kind of unexplainable.
The spontaneity.
Break it all down to component pieces. So I think it's a little bit of a mystery there. Now, there are rules to it. I mean, for instance...
Rules to humor?
Yeah. I mean, for instance, maybe rules is the wrong word, but like the rule of three. For instance, here's a little joke. If you want to find... There's three places you can find the truth. Mm-hmm. From children, from drunks, and from yoga pants.
Ew.
And it's the rule of three. And the thing is, it's the surprise.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
You know, you're expecting ABC and you get AB4.
Yeah.
And that's where the humor is. It's that little surprise that your brain wasn't expecting.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some things to construct humor, but studying it in detail, I think.
But
that varies by culture, too.
And it's absolutely
funny here. Yeah. Isn't it funny in India?
It is not cross-cultural.
Right.
And it's different. Like, I can listen to a song I heard in high school, and I just love it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do that with jokes. You know, once you've got the surprise, you start hear the joke again. Like,
I heard that.
So I really feel for these stand-up comics, because now, every time they go on stage, people have got cameras, and they're putting it on Facebook and this. So they go to their next gig, everyone's heard their joke.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I haven't thought about that.
Yeah, it's really tough for them.
Well, there's also the whole thing about, and I don't mean to disparage this exactly, but the whole thing about political correctness, which has dramatically changed humor.
Oh my gosh. Remember when we used to tell Polack jokes?
Blonde jokes.
Well, being from Montana, when I was growing up, we told North Dakota jokes.
There you go. Yeah. Well, and there have been lots of jokes about Black people and other immigrants that that sometimes
it's not funny.
And so there's humor that is often humor is at someone else's expense,
right.
But there's also self-deprecating humor,
and that's my favorite, and that's what I like to use when I you know, try and make somebody laugh. Make fun of myself.
Well, in this United States culture, humor has changed dramatically in our lifetime.
Yeah.
I was telling you all when we started, I was looking for clips of stand-up comedy from Richard Pryor and Robin Williams and George Carlin. And I had a heck of a time finding any that I could actually play on the radio, for one thing.
Sure.
Because of the use of those seven words we're not supposed to use, which actually George Carlin does a routine about.
Yeah, that's one of his
seven dirty words.
Yeah, it is.
And then the things that they were making fun of would not play well in today's culture.
In the 70s, there was a movie called Where's Papa? Have you seen that?
No.
It's Ruth Gordon and George Segal and Trish Vandeveer. And it was in the 70s. And it's about a son who's taking care of his mother, who's Ruth Gordon. And at the time, it was absolutely hilarious. It was hilarious. There's so many funny things in this movie. So well written. And Ruth Gordon is at her top. Very old. And I thought the other day, I'd really like to watch it again, just because I haven't seen it in years. Yeah. And it'd be so funny. So I invited a girlfriend over and we sat down and watched the movie. And we were just aghast.
Really?
It's not funny anymore.
Yeah,
It's not funny anymore.
It's so contextual to the society that it's told in.
I mean, no, it's not funny.
Now, here I got two little jokes for you.
Okay.
And save your applause. Here's number one. That new reporter fell down on his first assignment. What was it? City sidewalks in winter. Okay. Okay. Here's number two. Mr. Jingle's writings show a great deal of imagination, don't you think? Yes, they show he can imagine himself as writing poetry.
Oh, dear.
Those are from 1907.
Who?
Oh,
the
wow.
The 1907 newspaper.
Really?
It was an article of jokes. So you can see that little surprise and twist then.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I had to go through a lot of jokes to get ones I could tell on the air.
Yeah.
Because
even
of the
then?
Contextual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, because of the, oh.
Yeah, they're making, you know.
Well, they were at someone else's expense.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. Well, there are so many types of humor, you know, pratfalls and
I
fart
love pratfalls.
Yeah.
I mean, all that kind of stuff. What's your favorite kind of humor? Do you have a favorite humor, Chris?
I don't think so.
Just like to laugh.
Yeah, I like to laugh. You know, I do like, I think the comedians that make you work for a little bit, like it's not right in front of you when he gets done speaking.
Mm-hmm.
You mm-hmm. got to think.
Think about it a little
bit. I admire those.
Yeah.
There was a French guy who died in the early 80s. And I've forgotten his name, but they called him the intellectuals comedian. And I always thought, wow, what a great title.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
because
comedians are often very smart people because they got to find that little widget that makes you laugh.
Right.
And the more breadth of knowledge they have, the more they can pull in facts and figures and scenarios. So they're usually well-rounded, even though it doesn't show sometimes in their acts.
Well, and they have to be keen observers of human behavior.
Correct.
Right.
Lenny Bruce, when you said intellectual comic, came to mind. Lenny Bruce was one of those.
Yeah.
Very political, very intellectual, very controversial for his time.
Right?
I think he went to jail several times.
He did.
Yeah. He did.
Cursing on stage, I think, or something like that.
Something ridiculous.
Things that,
I think it was the F word, and he refused to stop saying it.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was.
And they would just have the cops sit in the back of his act.
Right.
He says it, and they walk up and arrest him.
Yeah. So to get persecuted for your humor, that's kind of hard.
And these
That's
people
harsh.
All here voluntarily, you know,
right.
it's not in the public, public plaza where kids are hearing it. So,
oh, right.
Well, I do really enjoy what you're talking about, intellectual humor, you know, Lenny Bruce, that kind of humor. But I have to confess, I love pratfalls.
Oh, me
so
too.
Do I
love the Stooges.
I mean,
so
Steve
do
Martin
I.
kills me and so does Chevy Chase. And it's stupid. But they're so funny.
You
they
know
are.
What?
They're hilarious.
Some really good pratfalls. Did you ever see Modern Family?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They had some really good pratfalls. I was always impressed by, especially the mother, Julie Bowen, who was... She slipped on some eggs that were on the floor that just... Like, how did you do that without killing yourself?
Yeah.
Well, you know, and those are pulling things from real life.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true.
I had that experience when my older son was just learning how to walk.
Oh.
And he got into, I had vegetable oil under the sink. Bad move.
Oh, dear.
And he toddled into this. It was a little apartment kitchen, so it had a partition on the floor, a threshold. Fortunately, because he got in there and he poured the oil all over the floor.
Oh, nice.
And I hear him crying and I go, and he can't get up. he's slipping and sliding around in the oil. And I start laughing and I went in to pick him up and I was laughing so hard. I'm slipping and sliding in the oil. We were both totally greased by the time I was finished.
You did your own.
That's a pratfall.
That is a pratfall.
Yeah.
The other pratfall queen, I think, was Carol Burnett.
Oh, gosh.
Oh,
yes.
My gosh. Yes. Yes.
You know, Lucy, yeah. And Lucy.
Yeah.
Lucy was good too.
But, you know, kind of going back to your life experiences, I've read where comedians now are gravitating more of their act to their personal experience because let's say 20 years ago, President falls going up the stairs to his airplane. He might put that in his act.
Right.
But these days that happens and every joke you can imagine has been on Twitter. It's been on Facebook.
Yeah,
so,
right,
you know,
competition is like,
yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. So, but they can't make, they don't know his own life. So when he makes fun of that, that's not already out there.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting.
I hadn't thought about the impact of social media.
Yeah, on, you know, and there's
on the livelihood of a stand-up comic.
I can't imagine anything worse than standing up in front of people.
Oh well, you've done it, Chris.
I've tried
you?
It, and I don't have a thick enough skin for it.
Well, that's me too. I wouldn't have, because what if nobody laughs?
Yeah.
Well, I was even last time I did it was over at the Red Bike, and I was excited because there were a lot of people there. I've done it before with very few people, and that's tough.
Yeah.
You don't want to be the only guy laughing when there's other people in there.
People
so
in
you
room.
You want a group that, you know, it's infectious, right?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
There was a group that was talking so loudly, I it was hard for me to, and so I shut it down.
You did? You just stopped?
I just stopped. Said, oh, that's all I got.
Okay,
and I walked
goodbye.
Off. Yeah. I just, like, I'm not going to fight you guys. I just, that's not my temperament.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't deal with hecklers.
Yeah,
I just couldn't.
I wouldn't be able
that's
to.
That's why I like the radio. You can't see the disappointment on your audience's face.
And we all like each other here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's really good. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're really funny. I think you're really funny too, Linda.
Well, I was voted wittiest in high school. I don't mean
were
brag.
You?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I never thought I'd say that out loud.
Me at all. That doesn't surprise me at all. Not a bit.
How big was the class?
What? That's a really good question. It was in Tennessee, so, you know, it was all knock-knock jokes.
I was thinking if you were the wittiest in the class. I just wondered, you know, what was your competition?
I think we had 300 or 400 kids.
Oh, wow.
I don't know.
You know,
pretty impressive.
Anyway.
You mentioned how contagious laughter can be once we start laughing. And I know a couple of women who lead board retreats and, you know, planning sessions and all that kind of stuff. And they told me the other day that one thing they like to do is go in together and introduce themselves. And then they stand there in the boardroom with everyone anticipatory, waiting for the big messages, and they start giggling. They just, one will giggle a little bit, and then they'll pretend, you know, oh dear, and then the other one laughs a little bit, and pretty soon somebody at the table starts laughing, and pretty soon the other guy down at the other end starts laughing, and she said within 5 minutes, you have the whole room laughing belly laughs, and they have no idea what they're laughing about. It's like
I believe that
contagious laughter. Or how about the laughter that happens when you're in an uncomfortable situation, like church or a funeral?
Like right now,
I have a story about. I have a story about that. I spent 10 days doing Vipassana meditation several years ago, and it's 10 days of silence. You don't speak. You don't make eye contact. You don't read anything. You get to know people by their shoes. And you sit in large groups and meditate for hours. And so both my husband and I were there, and he was with the men and I was with the women. But we're sitting in this group hall meditating, and somebody let a huge fart rip. and you know you're trying to be quiet, right? And so you hear this contagious laughter, the seed is dropped, right?
Yeah, right.
So you hear this. The whole place broke up.
Well, I think it would have. I know somebody who was in a job interview. And she was, it was just she and the vice president of the big computer company, and it was a big job, and she wanted it really bad. So they're sitting, she's across the mahogany desk from him, and he's, you know, scrutinizing everything. And he said, "Do you have any samples of something?" And she said, "Yes, I do." And it was in her briefcase. So she leaned over to her briefcase, and in the process of leaning, she let out a fart.
Never lean.
Never lean. Stop leaning. But anyway, so then the whole room is silent, you know, because there's only two people in there. And the man, the man knows she did it, and she knows she did it. And you can't give anybody else a dirty look, you know, to try to blame somebody else.
No dogs in there.
No dogs. So after about, I don't know, 30 seconds of shock, she just looked right at him and said, "Well, does this mean I don't get the job?" And now I'll tell you who that was. It was me.
Oh, did you get the job?
I got the job. I did. I got the job.
Thank God he had a sense of humor. I have a story about something like that, and I did not get the job.
Oh.
But I was trying to land a freelance gig with a PR agency that I had worked with in Chicago out here. And one of the people who was part of this PR organization was a good friend of mine, and I had traveled with him internationally doing other programs and so forth. His name was Joel, and he brought the big boss from Chicago to interview me, and we were at fancy Asian restaurant in Seattle, and we had been drinking a bit.
Oh, no.
And the big boss, we'll call him Ed, was sitting across the table from me, and he was bald, very, very high forehead. And Joel was telling, we were having dessert, and it was orange sherbet. And Joel was telling the story of how he had conceived his son on an L platform in Chicago.
Oh, my God.
And I did one of those laughs with orange sherbet in my mouth. And so adrenaline slowed everything down as I watched the orange sherbet arc across the table and go
on his bald head,
right on his bald head, and drip down his face. And I thought, I'm not getting this game.
I won't get this job.
No, dinner ended pretty abruptly shortly there.
Did it?
Check, please.
That was that.
You know, there's a funny story about Mark Twain. And you know, we had a Chautauqua here on the island.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gate 90. So those are all over the country, and they often had speakers go, you know, that was their, you know, tour.
Yeah.
And Mark Twain was doing that because he went bankrupt because he invested in typewriters.
Right.
So he was at a bar before the show or the day before, and he heard this man's laugh that was so big and so infectious. He paid him to go in the audience on his tour.
Oh.
So he could be the seed of the laughter.
Right. He's a plant,
yes.
What a good idea.
That was a great idea.
Yeah.
Typewriters, not such a good idea.
Well, at the
I'm
time.
Surprised. Yeah. Yeah. He invested in typewriters too soon.
He was the first guy to write a novel with a typewriter.
Oh,
I didn't know.
A published novel, yes. And he was amazed with it.
Mm-hmm.
But there were so many different kinds and so many different varieties that you know, it wasn't until a while till the QWERTY keyboard became, and they put QWERTY like that so it would slow down typists.
Why?
Because they would jam.
Oh,
the keys would
jam the keys, yeah.
But the smart keyboards, there's a Dvorak keyboard, and it's got all the vowels on the home row, so it's much faster typing.
Mm.
But this is just, in fact, I learned it when I learned to type, thinking I was a smarty pants. And then I went out in the world, and every keyboard in the world is QWERTY.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So I relearned typing QWERTY.
I guess you did. Oh. Well, at least you're not doing, you know, two fingers. You know,
that makes me think of our underwriters.
Yep. I got them lined up here.
We should be thanking.
Yes, sir. Ready?
We're ready.
Are you ready?
We can't do what we do without our underwriters, like Vashon Market IGA and Vashon Plaza, one block west of the main highway, where you can find everything your family needs, from fresh produce to kids' specials, legendary meats, wine, spirits, and movies. Open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
VOV programming support is provided by Island Escrow, Vashon's only independent escrow company providing comprehensive service for all types of real estate transactions since 1979. on the web at islandescrow.net.
And here we are.
We're back, I think.
We are. So we're talking about what makes us laugh. And we are all of a certain age. It goes back to Richard Pryor
Three Stooges.
Robin Williams. And, yeah.
Back when humor was humor.
Yeah, right. Back when humor was funny.
Mm-hmm.
So here's one I found of Robin Williams roasting Richard Pryor.
A gentleman by the name of Robin Williams. Robin, please.
Thank you. Uh-oh. Say what it was. Thank you. Get down, funky. Okay, get back up. Here we go. Lonely, look at me. I'm on national TV. I'm so happy to be here, I could drop a log. Here we go. Okay. Well, boop, they bleeped that one. Here we go. I just want to say, Richard's come a long way in 18 years. Not funny, but true. Now, 18 years ago, they'd greet him in small town to... Let me take that back. Okay. By tying a yellow ribbon around the old oak tree. Then they try and hang him with it.
Oh, see?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. All I can say, though, is this man's a genius. Now, who else can take all the forms of comedy, slapstick, satire, mime, and stand-up, and turn it into something that'll offend everyone? No, but this man doesn't want any frills on his show. All he wants is a loose director, a tight script, and a warm place to rehearse.
Yeah, so that wouldn't necessarily play today, even as mild as
as it was, yeah. So what about satire as humor? What do you think, Chris? Are you a satire
fan? Yeah, well, do you remember my little newspaper, The Mostly True Vashon News?
Yes,
yeah,
of course
that
I
was,
do. Well, that was very good. Yeah, that was satire.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. I think it's really an interesting form. I think it's...
It's sophisticated.
A form of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, you know, one of those mediums where you can tell the king he's not wearing any clothes.
You can.
And that's often been done in, you know, pamphlets and so much so in our history of our country. That's how you tell the people in power that they're wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And here's a good one from George Carlin, kind of along those lines. It's George Carlin on euphemisms.
Oh.
The music of the heaters. And now, ladies and gentlemen, George Carlin.
He looks so young and fit. He's dead now.
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
How's it going, everybody? Thank you very much. Thank you, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you, please. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And a couple more thank you, thank yous.
All right.
I'd like to talk a little bit about language tonight. You see, I don't like euphemisms. I don't like language that reflects fear and conceals the truth. You know, and I've noticed over a long period of time, as time goes by, people are less and less able to deal with reality. Americans can't really handle the truth, so they invent soft language to protect themselves.
Hmm.
And it gets worse with every generation. Give you an example of what I mean. There's a condition in combat when a soldier or a sailor can't take it anymore, when he's ready to snap, all stressed out. During the First World War, they called that shell shock. Good, simple, honest, direct language, two syllables, shell shock. Almost sounds like the guns themselves. That was 70 years ago. Then a generation later, we had the Second World War. Same combat condition was called battle fatigue. Four syllables now, takes a little longer to say, doesn't hurt as much. Fatigue is a nicer word than shock. Shell shock, battle fatigue. Then, In 1951, we had the Korean War, and Madison Avenue was riding high by then. The very same combat condition was called operational exhaustion.
Oh, my God.
We're up to 8 syllables now, and the phrase is completely sterile. There's no humanity left in it. Operational exhaustion
get that driving
sounds
on
like
the freeway.
Something that might happen in a car. Then came the Vietnam War, and that only ended 15 years ago. And with all the lies and deceit surrounding Vietnam, it's not surprising that the same condition was called post-traumatic stress disorder.
Interesting, huh?
Interesting, yeah.
That's not only language, it's there's a little bit of satire there, I would say.
Right?
Yeah,
right? Yeah.
I would say so, too.
And evolution of our attitudes.
Right.
Who are we kidding?
Yeah, yeah.
Who are we trying to kid?
Trying to sanitize what's happening out there through language.
Yeah. Sanitize the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Which is,
well, it's a very fine line, isn't it, between mm-hmm. offense and humor.
And it's getting finer.
Finer and finer. Yeah, I keep my mouth shut a lot. I do.
Yeah, and you know, I just don't think that's good.
No.
I don't. We obfuscate the truth of who we are and of what's going on around us
mm-hmm.
when we try so hard not to say anything. Like,
yeah,
you know, one of the phrases I hate the most is, it's all good.
Oh, yeah, we talked about that. I hate that.
Well, you know, I have a niece that'll come in, and I'm watching television with her dad, and she'll watch it for 10 seconds. That's racist.
Oh!
And, like, you know, it's Columbo, okay? I can't help that it's racist.
I know.
So, yeah.
Speaking of Columbo, I have 2 friends who during COVID watched every single Columbo episode.
Oh my gosh!
Starting with the first episode all the way through the end of the show.
Where in the heck did they find that?
It's on Hulu, I think.
Oh, Hulu. I bet it's Hulu.
But I tuned into a couple of them and they're pretty darn good.
They are.
What's your favorite kind of humor? Like the person? Hello.
You know
what people make you laugh?
A stand-up that I've been enjoying is Sarah Millican, and she's a British stand-up lady.
Oh, I've heard her. Yeah.
And it's life experience and, you know, observations and things like that. But I've enjoyed her lately, and I think it changes, you know, who I like. And some people are like, wow, why did I like them?
Yeah, why was that funny?
I like Dave Chappelle, as offensive as he can be. He is brilliant.
He's
so ornery.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But
he's really funny.
It.
Yeah.
And I think I like more than that is ensembles.
Oh.
You know, like a Seinfeld or Modern Family, you know, where
they bounce off each other.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not somebody, just one person carrying all the water like Chappelle. I mean, he's a genius.
Yeah.
But I kind of like different characters interacting.
Has either of you ever watched Schitt's Creek?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Man. Oh, it's so funny.
I love it.
It's hilarious. So funny. And so warm and loving.
Yeah.
I
really think it's a great show. I wonder how we could introduce laughter into our daily life. You know, it's sort of like, could we just have some meditation and some laughter?
Isn't there a laughing in yoga or something?
Yeah, there used to be.
Yeah.
And there used to be, when I lived in Manzanita, Oregon, there was a woman who would go to the city square on Wednesday at noon.
Really?
And stand there and laugh. And we were all invited to come. And all they did was stand around together and laugh for 15 minutes. And then everybody went back to work.
Oh, my God.
It was hilarious. It was really funny.
Yeah.
So I think we should start that on Vashon. Just a few of us stand on the corner at the four-way stop and laugh.
And point. I think laugh we should point and laugh.
Yeah. I'm this close to being locked up anyway. So
oh, are
I
you?
Think that might put me over the edge.
I'll protect you, Chris. I'll protect you.
Well, you know, one thing I found interesting was I wrote this spoof, satire, soap opera.
Oh, my gosh.
Called The Guiding Blight.
I remember that.
Yeah.
That was funny.
I
want
to read it.
And we started practice. It was me and Hetty and Annalie and couple other people, and we were having so much fun.
I bet.
And then this person came in who actually did work in that field, and she was like, "That's not going to work. That's not going to work. That's not going to work." It was kind. It cast a pall
just
over the whole room.
It.
It's almost like you know, you find kids that have found a board game and they're making up a game and they're really enjoying it. An adult comes in and goes, "That's not how you play Monopoly." And you got to follow these rules and do all this. And it just killed it.
Yeah.
No more blight.
No more blight. Well, maybe you should try it again.
Bad. Yes, maybe.
Well, do it as improv. I think improv is hilarious.
It is.
Well, that's something we haven't covered. I think you're, that's my favorite.
Yeah, improv is good.
I love improv. And actually, well, I found some improv with Robin Williams on, what was that improv show that used to, Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah. Well, you know, I took Michael Barker's class.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did we take it together?
I don't think so. Okay. I took it twice.
Was it fun?
It was really fun.
I bet.
What I found interesting was at the last night, they would have people come in, right? It wasn't really a show, but they would have people come in. And there were one or two actors in the group, and they didn't want to do it. They were too afraid. But I wasn't. But then when I had to act, I was terrified. Like, I would write my own lines and practice. And so I'm just not built that way.
Yeah.
I'm not built to be an actor. I'm built to be a...
a radio guy.
An improv. Yeah, right. Off the cuff.
Storyteller. You're a storyteller.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the matter?
Oh, Dan Schuler, welcome to
the
show.
Hi, Dan Schuler.
Tell me what microphone you're on really quickly. Dan Schuler,
we have an imposter. Welcome. Have a seat.
One of the people who keeps Voice of Vashon rolling. Give me your voice there, Dan.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Yeah.
Well, I just had to step in here.
Okay.
I was actually in the studio to work
on
some of the technical stuff and to do some spackling on the door. But it reminded me of something I actually did in 1971. I was in an improv group. It was called the Skid Road Sideshow. It was part of Skid Road Theater in downtown Seattle. On the original Skid Road. And there was a theater called Skid Road Theater, and we were this thing called the Skid Road Sideshow. And we did actual improv. And we did practice. And, you know, like when once and we went on and performed once a week on Saturday night at the at the place that became it was called the Northwest Passage. It was a little bar that had in the back room, they had a little stage and a place for people to take their drinks, and we would do improv for them on Saturday nights. And
how
it was great fun.
It is fun. And why not do that at home at night? Why not? You know, if you want to bring laughter into your house, or into your life, as you were saying, Linda.
So I'm coming over Saturday night. Would you and Luke improvise for me?
No, with you.
Oh, okay. Well, all right.
You have to participate. Improv is,
Improv gets
definite audience participation.
That's true.
Right.
Gets the energy from the audience.
Right.
So
it's a funny way to be. I like that too.
Well, my husband Luke tends to he'll do what I call chaining out to the point of what I call crossover. So he'll drop a line or imagine a situation, and he'll start talking about it in detail, how it would go and how bad it would get. And usually it turns into something really disgusting or offensive. And that's when we hit the crest. But that's that's how we improv.
So any ideas, you guys, about how we can bring humor into our everyday lives?
Bring back Church of Great Rain.
That
was great.
That was a great loss.
You know, I think laughing at ourselves, we take so much.
I know, but
so
I do that
seriously.
Every day, all day.
Laugh at yourself?
Yes, because wouldn't you?
Well,
if you were me,
anything,
it's hard to be me.
It isn't easy being you.
No.
What do you think, Chris? How do we bring laughter into our everyday lives?
I don't know. You know, it takes a lot of work.
It does. As,
you know, you got to make it easy to do, no preparation, kind of like my show.
Mm-hmm.
You just walk in and try and make each other laugh. But
you
got to practice and write a script, and that gets a little crazy.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But I like to make myself laugh. You know, I live alone, and so I laugh at myself a lot because stuff happens when you're alone hilarious. And really, you don't need anybody else to know about it. But I think laughing by myself is it's a gift to be able to do that. And I do sometimes get some strange looks from people if I'm out and about, because a lot
and
of
you
things
start giggling.
Because a lot of things strike me really funny.
Well, I think about things that I might have done, like if I almost fall over the grocery cart, I think about how funny it would be if it happened. And it makes me laugh.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm laughing out of context, and I should probably be locked up.
Well, I hope everybody out there has something to laugh about today. And if it doesn't come today, maybe it will come tomorrow.
That's right.
And
think I'd funny.
Like to say thank you all for joining.
Well, thank you for the invite. This is wonderful.
I'm really glad you came, Chris.
You too.
And our interloper was fun, too.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks for letting me in.
It was nice to see you.
Well, you know, it's... Don't worry about the small stuff, and it's all small stuff.